Here we are, all of a sudden, in ordinary time after the Christmas festivities. I don't know why green has become associated with ordinary time, but here's what I do know. The word ordinary sounds like everyday, usual, routine, commonplace, doesn't it? Ordinary time was contrasted or is used to contrast with higher times, like the higher times of Advent and Christmas. The ancients understood that there was more time than this, followed by this, but there are other higher times that intervene, that come into contact with us and create a closeness with the event celebrated. So, for example, Christmas of 2020 is closer to the Nativity of Jesus than the first Thanksgiving of 1621. Because this higher time creates this closeness with the event. Somewhat similar with space, the space of Assisi or the Holy Land, for example, if you walk there, there's a closeness that's created between the events and the person of St. Francis and Jesus, for example. Now, ordinary time came to be a description of secular time. The word secular comes from the Latin seculum, which means century or age. It's an age. So ordinary, secular time is contrasted with God's time, the eternal time of God. This came to be a way of contrasting vocations. Those who live in secular time, those who are involved in the things of this age, as you all are, compared with those who live closer to the eternal time of God, who are removed largely from the things of this world and cloistered, as in a monastery or a convent. This gave rise to that lovely saying that some of you older folks might recall, the priests pray and the lay pay. Of course you do, right? This was originally something to indicate the complementarity of vocations. The clergy prays for the laity, providing like a beacon pointing towards the eternal. Don't forget that this world isn't it, and the laity, well, they work and they defend the clergy and their country. This also became a way of distinguishing priests that are called a regular or religious, who are removed from the world, as opposed to parish priests. Another name for parish priests is secular priests, priests who are involved in the things of this world, ministering to those who are involved in this world. Now, with the push for reform in the 11th century, trying to get you heathen lay people to be holy, but especially in the 16th century, Protestant Reformation, which rejected the idea of higher vocations like the vocations of monks and simply declared them invalid. How many Protestant monks or nuns do you see? None. With this push for reform, which intended greater holiness, but effectively what happened is it condensed everything into secular time. This severely affected the sense of the sacred and of feast days or holy days. How many Protestant holy days of obligation are you aware of? It also affected the sacraments. No, this little bit of bread doesn't have anything to do with the next world. It is just bread. There are no sacraments or sacred mysteries, only the mysteries of Sherlock Holmes. It began to seem like the Christian life could consist only in a certain manner of living in the world. Now, rulers were all too happy with this focus, finding more laborers, fewer monks, fewer nuns, more laborers to do their work, and fewer holy days to take their laborers away from their work, so that their economies became more dynamic, and thus they had more support for their armies. From this stage, it wasn't a huge step to that world of the eternal has no bearing on this world. That would be the perspective of several of the founders of the United States who were deists. They believed in God, believed that he designed, created the world, but he was like a watchmaker which wound up the world and let it go and did not intervene. And then eventually, This world is it. And so we find ourselves living in a secular society, a society taken up with this age, with only the things of this age. What else could there be? Providentially, though, as we begin ordinary time, we're provided with readings making it clear that God doesn't remain holed up in the eternal, but interacts and intervenes in this seculum, in this age, involving human beings in his work of uniting heaven and earth. Samuel, Samuel, speak, for your servant is listening. And Jesus, come with me and you will see. The eternal does have something to do with the ordinary. God is not disengaged from us. Kids, there is a special message here for you. The calling of Samuel occurred during a dysfunctional time. Leaders who should have been good examples were not. And the calling of the disciples by Jesus occurred when the most powerful government leader of the time ruled as though the government or the state was everything, that it could provide everything humans need, and therefore had a right to absolute allegiance in thought, word, and deed. It could dictate all these, leaving no space for personal freedom. Jesus and his small number of followers revealed this deception. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's, even if it cost you your life's blood. Government didn't come first and create man and give human rights. But God created the human person in his image and likeness and said, mirror this fact in the way you rule. Such governance alone is just, for human hearts are made for more than what man-made institutions can provide. Kids, in so many ways, you are being force-fed lies and deceptions about what it means to be a human person, about how to engage with other human persons and to govern them, while being left with problems many adults seem unwilling to address, from the wounded environment to national debt to artificial identities to the unjust concentration of wealth. Our problems fundamentally regard human persons, not systems or machines. So although technology can assist, it cannot solve the world's problems, but you can be part of the solution. Listen for the voice of our Creator, which means be faithful to his words and way of life. He is the origin and the fulfillment of the human heart, not big tech, not big government, and not big paychecks. Parents, there is also a special message here for you, it seems to me. Both instances of being called in our readings demonstrate our heart's capacity for God and an eagerness to do something meaningful with our lives. But also apparent is the role of others fostering and facilitating God's call, be it Andrew in the gospel or Eli in the first reading. And don't miss how the child, Samuel, naturally turn to the one closest to him. This is you. It's meant to be you. The smartphone, social media, video games, sports, and many other things will gladly take your place if you permit it. Create an environment, a way of life, which helps your children to hear the most important voice of all. And an essential component of this is providing the example of listening for God yourself. Pray. Let your children see you pray, and pray with your children here, at home, and on your journeys. Journeying with God and one another. This is one of the allusions of St. Paul's words, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you. This is a clear reference to the promise of God to Ezekiel. My dwelling place shall be with them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And it's a clear reference to God's dwelling among the Israelites as they journeyed through the desert. God is dwelling with you and guiding you, St. Paul is saying, as you journey through the desert of this life to the promised land. Listen for him. Trust in him. provide him with a way into your ordinary days.